The Doctor Is In is a co-production of Ave Maria Radio and EWTN Radio and carried across the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network.
Hi, everybody. This is Dr. Ray. You are listening to a least worst of The Doctor Is In. We have no best of, but this is truly one of our least worst.
Hello, Dr. Ray.
Hi, Dr. Ray. How are you?
I'm sure I'm going to get really good advice from you.
Well, I don't know about that.
You know, I was looking for a deeper answer.
You came to the wrong place.
So what do I do?
Well, I don't know. I'm not going to tell you what to do.
This is wonderful advice. This is what I needed to hear.
You're right on track with this. You're right on track.
Everybody make a mistake.
Does that comfort you?
No.
Am I close?
No.
You are the best thing that has ever happened to people.
Did I make you feel a lot better or what?
No, you made me feel worse.
Now, from the studios of Living Bread Radio Network in Canton, Ohio, the hometown of Mother Angelica, here's Dr. Ray.
Good shrinks sometimes make people feel worse, temporarily, as they come upon insights and information that they weren't aware of, but that information and insight may help them move in a better direction in life. So is there a moment there where there could be a bit of emotional agitation? Of course. And that's usually what I hide behind on this radio program when people say, you emotionally agitate me. I hide behind the temporary insight value of emotional agitation, and I don't admit to just emotional agitating somebody per se, although that does seem to happen. Good to have you with me here. I'm Dr. Ray Guarendi. Program, The Doctor Is In. Number, 877-573-7825. My compadres, sure hope I can still say that. I think I can say padre. Andrew Krucek, producer man over there. And Eric Dumont, who is our call screamer. Good to have you. You actually call him, he doesn't scream. He's much more polite than I am. Hello, the doctor is in. What is your question or comment, please? Oh, he's just like a sing-songy, kind of like one of those guys that reviews movies on NPR. Today's movie is by the... That's what happens. Okay. What else do I want to say? Couple of items of business. I just got an email from Andy, headmaster over there at St. John Bosco in Rochester. He's telling me they got some pretty good numbers floating up there. So that is tomorrow, 7 o'clock, St. John Bosco, Andy Filacco, the headmaster there. Hopefully I can get there in plenty of time. I'm leaving here at 2 right after the program. So if you're in the Station of the Cross listening area, which Rochester is, please join us. I guarantee you will come away feeling empowered, and you will laugh. That's that. And then Sunday, 10, 11, and 12 of this week, I'm going to be in Erie, PA. So I got to text Father Larry, let him know I'm hanging around, and he can show up and maybe get a few pointers on how he can speak better to people. You know, he's been studying me. He's been kind of an understudy. All right, let me give out the number here so we get some calls. 877-573-7825. Middle child syndrome. Most parents have probably heard of it. Is it a syndrome? Well, no, it's not an actual diagnosis. It's a media diagnosis. It's gotten profiles in the media. It came out, I'd say 3-4 decades ago. And main symptoms, main signs are, maybe a lost kid in the middle. You know, doesn't have the privileges of the oldest, doesn't get the attention given to the youngest. This is a kid in the family structure that struggles to, where do I fit in? You know, maybe some identity problems, maybe some misbehavior to get attention. Maybe some bounciness as he or she moves through childhood. It's a picture. It's a puzzle of certain characteristics and behaviors that are not necessarily applicable or do not parallel the other two kids. Okay, so you got it? Well, we got several problems with middle child syndrome. The first I mentioned. It's not a syndrome. It's not a diagnosis. It's one of those many things that the media latches onto, and it's been a theory from some psychologists, and it kind of sounds pretty cool, doesn't it? So the media latches onto it, gives it a high profile, and parents go, yeah, well, wait a minute. You know, my middle kids are kind of like that. So that's the first thing. Second thing, it has a prevalence that at one time was higher than it is now. What do I mean by that? One or two children is now by far the bulk numbers of kids. You have three, you're in a minority. So two generations ago, three kids was not unusual. It might have been somewhat at the lower end of the number of kids. So there were many more parents with three kids. And that middle spot was more common. It's not as common now. There's not that many middle kids now because families are smaller. However, if you are nervous about middle child syndrome, there's a simple cure. Don't have an odd number of kids. You can only have a middle child if you got an odd number of kids, 3, 5, 7, 9, 11. Now, if you have an odd number, you better have another kid or maybe give one away. I don't know. You got to wipe out that middle spot. Another problem. Those of you who have five kids, or seven, or nine. My wife and I had 10, so we had no middle children. We had an upper middle and a lower middle. However, those of you who have, let's say, seven, well, you've had three middle children over the years. Somebody was occupying that middle spot. When you had three, you had a middle child. But then when you had five, your middle child was no longer, your first middle child was no longer your middle child. As a matter of fact, your middle child is now second oldest of the five. And then when you went to seven, you had a new middle child, and you had a former middle child, and the original middle child, the aboriginal middle child, is now somewhere near the top of seven children. So he could be considered among the oldest, which raises this question. How long do you have to be a middle child to contract middle child syndrome? Can you have acute middle child syndrome right when you're smack in the middle of it? How about residual middle child syndrome? You once were a middle child for 2 years, let's say. But then more children came along and you moved out of that spot and somebody else occupied it. So you're not a middle child anymore. But you were there for a couple of years, so you could have chronic middle child syndrome. Some of you listening to me right now have two children. And you're hoping that God gives you a third. Do you know what that means? It means your younger child has latent middle child syndrome. Hasn't really experienced the middle position yet, but it's potentially there. But here's the biggest problem with middle child syndrome. Temperament. Of three children, one of them is likely to be the more difficult kid to raise. One of them is likely to be the more immature. One of them is likely to be the one that kind of struggles with getting along with life and seems to have more than their share of bumps and bruises emotionally. It's going to be one of them. With three children, there's a one-third chance that's your middle child. 33% of a phenomenon is very much enough to keep a stereotype alive. If people hear the vague description of middle child syndrome, a third of them might say, well, yeah, you know, that really describes my middle child. Well, it would describe that middle child if he or she were your oldest or your youngest, because that's who they are. It's their temperament. It's their nature. It's their inborn personality. So given that is probably the main reason why that kid acts the way he or she does. I hate to keep saying he or she. It's just clunky. It's clunky communication. It's clunky grammar. Since we've all become so prickly about how we're referred to. I'm going to change the way I want to be referred to. I want to be referred to as Mr. Lord Sir Ray. You have to. You have to, because that's what I want to be referred to. So given that, middle child syndrome, one, is not really a syndrome. Two, it switches all over the place when you have more than three kids. Three, temperament is much more powerful than birth order, for sure. And four, when we had three children, our middle daughter, Hannah, was definitely temperamentally different than Andrew and Sarah. Okay, and he was middle child. There you go. There's the explanation. Middle child. Then we adopted Sammy, and Hanny became upper middle. Well, Hanny was still Hanny. So we just figured it was kind of some residual reverberation of being the middle child. And then we adopted the twins, which gave us six. And now Hannah was second oldest next to Andrew, so she's long since passed the middle child spot. And we really didn't have a new middle child because we kind of skipped over middle child because we had an upper middle and lower middle when we had six. But Hanny was still Hanny. That's not, I'm not saying it's bad, just who she is. Different approach. And then we adopted Petey. We had seven. And our middle child became the twins. Well, now, can you have two occupy that middle spot? Okay. So, given all that, you can look at middle child as an explanation, but there's two other explanations much more powerful, and the one is temperament and the other is you. So there you have it.
Every year, couples who go on the Ave Maria Radio's Good News Cruise testify how their marriages are revitalized and transformed. When we said cabins are filling fast, we meant it. The 2025 cruise is sold out. But it's the Good News Cruise, not the Bad News Cruise. So the 2026 Good News Cruise is planned and taking orders. There'll be new special and surprise guests and familiar ones from Ave Maria Radio, as well as Father Michael Schmitz and Father Joe Krupp. Go to AveMariaRadio.net and click on the travel tab to find out more.
Do you own popular index mutual funds or ETFs? If so, you're automatically own shares of companies that conflict with your moral beliefs. Ave Maria Mutual Funds are managed to conform to pro-life and pro-family values. Long-term investors can invest in the no-load Ave Maria Mutual Funds. The experienced professional portfolio managers make decisions based on investment fundamentals and pro-life values. You can learn more about Ave Maria Mutual Funds today at 866-AVE-MARIA or visit AveMariaFunds.com.
The following program is brought to you in part by MyCatholicWill.com. Surveys show that more than half of Americans do not have a will. At MyCatholicWill.com, it takes as little as 15 minutes to write your will and secure a legacy of faith. MyCatholicWill.com is the exclusive online destination for creating a Catholic will. The process of writing a will is simple and now more accessible than ever. MyCatholicWill.com, a legacy of faith for those you love.
This October 8th, our sponsor, Spirit Juice Studios, presents the full story of a hero, narrated by Jonathan Rumi.
Father Flanagan lived his life by a simple principle, that we are all children of God, and it is our responsibility to care for one another.
Heart of a Servant, the Father Flanagan story, rated PG-13. Tickets and info at FatherFlanaganFilm.com. That's FatherFlanaganFilm.com. Exclusively in theaters nationwide, October 8th.
Welcome to Spirit of Stewardship. Jeremy Belsky is your host for real-life stories, encouragement, and ideas to enhance your own gifts of work, wealth, and wisdom in response to God's blessings for you.
I'm Jeremy Belsky, and today's topic is Stewardship of the Environment, God's Creation of Nature. When you hear the message, be a wise steward of your resources, do you ever consider the role you play in your community environment? It's natural to think of time, talent, and treasure when stewardship is mentioned, but our faith teaches us that all is gift from God. Thus, respect for nature and doing our part to ensure a safe and clean environment is important. Here are just three areas we can pay more attention. A lot of action has been taken in recent years by nonprofits geared towards a cleaner environment. The first area of focus is to eliminate litter. Consider how your actions to pick up after yourself are pleasing to God. Be proud to do your part to keep your community and neighborhood clean. Secondly, Look at ways to recycle and make the most out of your purchases. Does it matter to you that so much plastic consumes our landfills? Have you given thought as to how you can make a particular purchase last longer? Third, in a country filled with abundance, what's being done to ensure our nature and environment for the next generation? This is more than eating bread crust and cleaning off your plate. The root lies in not wasting what we've been given. There's a great deal of time and effort that goes into caring for our place of residence in addition to our possessions. Keeping up what is ours or giving our used possessions to the less fortunate are a couple of ways to be prudent stewards of our blessings from God. I'm Jeremy Belsky, your host for Spirit of Stewardship.
To learn how you can better share your talents and resources, contact your local parish priest. Your level of involvement in the church now positively impacts our faith in the future.
You're listening to The Least Worst Of The Doctor Is In with Dr. Ray Guarendi. So please, no calls at this time.
Very nice to have you with me, Dr. Ray Guarendi. Program Doctor Is In. Co-production, EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network and Ave Maria Radio Communications in Ann Arbor. Speaking of EWTN, that wonderful network is committed to spreading the gospel from a Catholic perspective, and it touches millions through television, radio, publishing, the internet. Well, right now, EWTN is looking for qualified people to fill a number of their great positions. They are. Everybody I talk to at EWTN loves working there. You can make a difference using your God-given talent. So just go to EWTN.com/employment. EWTN.com/employment. Take a look and see what they're offering. One of the things some folks say on this program is, look, I couldn't get through. Well, you can now. There are lines open. So, and that doesn't happen all that often, but they are open. I just did the live read. Didn't you hear me? You weren't listening. Andrew says, my producer man says, don't forget to do the live read. Speaking of, which he made fun of me because of my forgetfulness, he says, you can always do the live read. I just read it. Oh, Andrew. 877-573-7825. If you want to talk, you want to ask a question about something in your life, or you want to give a comment on something that's been brought up on this program, or in fact you would like to offer, and we've had this in the past, a lot of folks have said, you know what, this is what I've learned in my life about raising kids, about families, about marriages, about living life better, about the faith. Please do so. Everybody Loves Raymond. Yeah, that was a very popular sitcom in the 90s. And our version of this on Catholic media is some people sort of tolerate Raymond, as I am Raymond Guarendi. Just to extrapolate a little bit, one of the reasons we look for explanations regarding why our children are acting the way they're acting, because it's very natural to look outside oneself for the explanation. My child is that way because they have this. Or my child is that way because of this particular food item. My child is that way because of his birth order. My child is that way because of identity problems. My child is that way because he has that nature. And now there's some truth to that one. However, in the best place to start looking for an explanation as to why somebody else is the way they are toward you is to look at yourself first. Now, I know that's not going to sit well because people are going to say, oh, no, wait a minute. No. I'm the one that's getting blasted, scolded, critiqued, mistreated, put down, hurt. I understand that. But you can't do anything necessarily directly about that person. You can do a lot about you. And even if it's just your reaction to what they're doing, if you alter your reaction, you could have an effect on their conduct.
when I was first out of grad school, they tagged me as the dude who worked with the teenagers at the mental health center. Because I said that. I said, I like teens. I like working with teens. I wasn't that far out of teenhood myself. I think where was I? I was 23, something like that. But then I found out that it was much more effective if you want change to work with the parent. Because the parent is the one who controls the environment. The parent is the one who can alter expectations and follow through, calm, quiet, direct, discipline. The parent is the one who structures everything. So that's where you first look. And since then, I realized that pretty much any age kid, especially behavior problem ones, I will work with the parents. Even though many parents who come in my office have already achieved some kind of explanation from somewhere else, whether it's a previous therapist, whether it's family members, whether it's something they read online about why that child is acting the way he is. And I said he on purpose, because first of all, most behavior problems are boys. Still, it's about 2 to 3 to 1. The explanation lies somewhere in the child, whether it is the diagnosis, whether it is his place in the family. I have to work with the parent, because let's assume that even the child is legitimately diagnosed ADHD, which means he's more impulsive, which means he doesn't think through things. He may be a little more distractible. Still, the parent has to deal with that particular child. You can't say he's impulsive, therefore he's allowed to punch his sister. His brother never punched his sister because he wasn't impulsive. This one's impulsive, so he punches his sister. Okay, we understand that, but what are you going to do about it? Well, he doesn't learn. Well, yes, he does. It just may take him a lot longer to learn, which means you have to do the things you're doing a lot longer. We've become a culture that looks for pathology or disorder in other people to explain why they are the way they are. The new one now, and I'll move this to adulthood, is narcissist. He's a narcissist. She's a narcissist. As though that explains something. It explains nothing. It just kind of umbrella summarizes a bunch of behavior that is difficult, and it's difficult particularly for you. I ask people in my office, so you think that person is a narcissist? Yes. Is that person a narcissist with everybody? No. His so-and-so loves him, or this person gets along with him, or this, he's got great friends here. So then you're not really dealing with narcissistic personality disorder. Narcissistic personality disorder spreads itself across people. If that person is that way with you, that can be very frustrating, hard to deal with, be very difficult. But given that, you look at how do I deal with it, as opposed to saying, well, that person can't change, that person can't be any different. Why not? Well, because he's a narcissist. And I guarantee you, if you go to the internet and you look up narcissism, they're going to say, these people don't change. Well, Christians of all people should not buy that one. That's like saying the Holy Spirit can't do anything about anybody if they're a narcissist. God's going, oh boy, I'd really like to do something about that person's soul and the way they embrace religion or the way they treat others, but I can't. You know, he's a narcissist. All right. 877-573-7825. I do want to hear from you. Still got lines open, and we're at the bottom of the show.
Catholic Connection with Teresa Tomeo.
We're all going to suffer. No one is getting out of this life unscathed. Even if you're an agnostic or an atheist, everyone is going to suffer. The rain falls on the just and the unjust, as our Lord tells us in the New Testament. So what do we do with it? Do we just say, oh, I'm so glad that's over, and don't learn anything from it? Or do we say, okay, God, this was not fun? Or as St. Teresa of Avila, the great doctor of the church and my patron, said, if this is the way you treat your friends, no wonder you have so few, right? Like, really, Lord? Seriously? And that's okay if you express yourself that way, obviously with respect and love, but St. Teresa of Avila did it, and so many saints expressed their frustrations that way. But at the end of the day, they still came back to God and said, okay, Lord, this really stinks, but I know somehow at the end, I'm going to come through it, and you're going to show me what you want me to do with it.
Catholic Connections, Teresa Tomeo. Weekdays, 9 a.m. Eastern on EWTN Radio.
Christ is the answer with Father John Ricardo.
Here's the new challenge. At least 1 hour a week in front of the Blessed Sacrament with the goal of an hour a day in front of the Blessed Sacrament. I had a guy come up to me and he says, Father, you know, I'm doing a lot of things. I'm in a men's fellowship. I pray with my wife every day. I go to Mass every Sunday and usually a couple times during the week. I read scripture. He goes, I want more. I said, do you pray in front of the Blessed Sacrament? He said, outside of Mass, no. I said, I think that's the more. See, all these saints, these are the ones who surround us. These are the ones who ran before us. These are the ones who fought well, who kept the faith. They would tell you, as would every single saint in heaven right now, you cannot run this race if you don't spend time with the Master. Whatever else we're doing, it's second, third, and fourth. First things need to be first. And the first thing is to be with the Master. And the Master is Jesus.
You're listening to The Least Worst Of The Doctor Is In with Dr. Ray Guarendi. So please, no calls at this time.
It's been a real paradigm shift for me. Because all I got to say is I have lines open and I want to hear from you. And women call me. I think I said in college, oh, I don't know, maybe to 200 or 300 girls, sure like to hear from you. And ofer. So just something's different here. Maybe I should have tried the intellectual approach in college, you know, rather than the athletic kind of jock approach. Jessica from North Carolina is calling, and she got a new kid, God willing, coming up this summer. Hi, Jessica.
Hi, yes, my daughter will be born at the end of the summer.
Cool. Very good. Now your daughter will, now you'll have two children, I take it?
Yes.
Now, okay, so now your little baby will be a latent middle child syndrome. Because if you have three, then, you know, you guys got to be real careful there. You don't want her to get prepared to be the middle child here. So you're thinking that your six-year-old who's been with you all the time and it's just been you and that child is might have a little bit of... Oh, mixed feelings?
I haven't told him yet, and he is making comments like, Mommy, you're so soft. Your arms are so fun to cuddle with because they're flabbier than they used to be. But he hasn't noticed that my belly is different yet because he knows not to touch a lady, in her belly. So.
So he doesn't say things like, "Mommy, how come you can rest your drink on top of your belly like that? You never used to be able to do that." hasn't noticed that, huh?
I did buy a onesie that says "cute like my brother," but I haven't shown it to him yet.
Yeah, you know the standard advice on that, Jessica, is you make him feel all big special because he's going to be the big brother and he's going to be the one that's going to help you out and he's going to be the one that can watch the baby and he's going to have a sibling. You just do all that. Now, with all that said, that doesn't guarantee that he's going to be all excited about this because he'll be like, wait a minute, I had you to me. Who's this interloper over here?
Right.
When my sister was born, I was 22 months older than my sister. I welcomed her. I really did. I was three and a half.
Yeah.
You were three and a half. I was very sweet. I was a very welcoming child. I went into her bedroom when my parents weren't looking, and I threw a shoe in her face. Yeah. So this is not to say that your little guy won't have to adjust a little bit to this. But I think the biggest mistake parents make is they think that, okay, here comes the new sibling. So the sibling who's been there a while is going to start acting up to get attention. Okay, all of a sudden he's going to become a behavior problem. Typically, yeah, there may be part of that. But I think the other part of it is you're going to be a little more tired. And your parenting will probably shift. And you may be a little more obtuse or slipshod, which
less
is normal.
Less patient, right.
Yeah, absolutely. That's sure. You're going to have a little baby there. You're not going to get any sleep, Jessica. Understand this, don't you? You know that. So, yeah,
definitely.
I would just build up the whole idea. This is really great. You're going to be a big brother. Use the God gig, too. That's big. God gave us
Should
this
I wait
baby.
Until he notices the belly, or should I go ahead and tell him?
You can tell him. You say, hey, God has given us a little baby in that belly. Now, I hope he doesn't do what my son did. My son was 5. And he said, basically, how'd I get in there? And I said, well, God put you in there. And then he said, well, how did God put me in there? And I said, go ask your mother about that one. And then I said, what do you mean, Pete? And he said, well, did God throw me down in there or did he lay me in there? And I go, well, he laid you in there, Pete. I'm thinking, okay, we're done. We're almost home. I got 2 more lights to get through. I hope they're green. I can turn him over to his mother. I can say, hey, he has got a question for you. And then he said this. My son Peter's adopted. He said, and he was 5 when he asked these questions. He said, why didn't she keep me? And I said, Petey, she wanted you to have a daddy. She didn't have a daddy. She knew you needed a daddy. And God knew I needed a Petey. So he put us together.
That's
and I
great.
Thought, okay, I figured that'll shut him up, right? So we pull up behind this truck full of cows. And he goes, oh, man. Dad, why do they stink so bad? And that was it. The adoption question was over. The kid in the belly was over. So I would say, Jessica, pull up behind a bunch of cows. So your son, after he asked us a question. Yeah, honey, I don't think it's anything. You just trust your good mommy instincts, and you just play it up big, and he'll probably get all excited, or he won't get all excited, and then you may have to deal with a few things he does the first month or so. But keep the shoes away from him. He may do what I did. My sister still has this flat spot on her face. She always said, I wonder how I got that. And I said, you know, Marianne, if I knew, I could tell you, but I'd have no idea. God bless you, Jess. Way to go. Thanks, honey.
God bless you, too.
All right, bye.
Thank you.
Rose from Buffalo. Rose is from Buffalo. I, on the other hand, am from people. Hi, Rose.
Hi, Dr. A.
Oh, you're beating yourself up over the homeschooling thing because you're thinking, I'm not doing it very well.
I feel like we all do that, don't we? It doesn't every homeschool mom think that? I feel like we all do.
You know the irony, though, Rose? Here's the irony. If you just look at the stats, the homeschooling moms educate children well above the average.
I know, and I try to remind myself of that, but then I'm like, anytime I talk to another homeschool mom, I'm like, I just, you know, my oldest is 7. I have a 7, 5, 3, and 1-year-old, and I'm like, I just don't see the fruits of it yet, so I don't feel like...
Well, what fruits you
like,
want to see
doing
here?
Enough?
What, you want to translate Thomas Aquinas or what?
Adults, I guess.
What? What are you doing to yourself, Rose? What do you mean you're already projecting into successful adults with their 7, 5, 3, and 1? No wonder you're torturing yourself. First of all, my dear.
I would say that they're really good, though. I mean, they're doing well. My 7-year-old is.
So why are you second guessing yourself? Why are you second guessing yourself?
I don't know. Because.
I know.
Because I'm weird, right?
I know why you're doing it.
It's not normal.
I know why you're doing
That's
it.
That's why.
You're doing it because you're thinking, well, they look okay to me, but, you know, how do I know? What can I compare it to? That's what you're doing.
Yeah.
Why do we do this to ourselves? We have psychologized child rearing so that you can't enjoy the moment with that 7, 5, 3, and 1-year-old. As you homeschool the 7 and the 5-year-old, thinking, yeah, we're moving along pretty good. You know, maybe reading isn't coming as easy to the 7-year-old as I thought it would, but it'll get there. And
And oh, no, he can read at a third grade level.
Well, what are you saying? For heaven, you want him to read at a ninth? What are you talking about here, Rose?
I don't know.
I think you could be just saying, you know, this is tough. I mean, you got four little kids. When my wife homeschooled, we had 12 down to zero. And the 4-3-2 and baby, well, they couldn't be homeschooled. So my wife was homeschooling the six older ones. And so I had to build like a little, I called it a gate, down in the basement where we kind of put the 4-3 and 2-year-old to kind of spend time so my wife could actually have a couple hours uninterrupted by the 2-3 and 4-year-old while I watched TV. You know, because sometimes they made too much noise and I had to raise the volume. Stay there, Rose. Don't leave. I got more to shore you up on. 877-573-7825. This is Dr. Ray. Thank you for the calls. We got room for more, so call in now if you want to call in. I think we can get to you.
'60 on 10 with Monsignor Charles Pope.
The 10th commandment: you shall not covet your neighbor's goods. This commandment is similar to the 9th because it uses the word covet, which means to inordinately or inappropriately desire something. And therefore, related to this are concepts that are familiar to us, such as greed or avarice, which is the undue passion for riches and power. Likewise, envy and jealousy are related here. In jealousy, you have something that I want, but I want it inappropriately or excessively. Envy, however, is a very dark thing because it wants to destroy that which is good in another person because it makes me look bad by comparison. And so in all these ways, the Lord is asking us to look very carefully to our desires because they can grow too expansive and lead us into very grave sins. The 10th commandment: you shall not covet your neighbor's goods.
For more about the 10 commandments, visit EWTNRC.com.
How do we define sin? The Catholic Catechism defines it in detail, calling sin an offense against reason, truth, and right conscience, a failure in genuine love for God and neighbor caused by a perverse attachment to certain goods. St. Augustine defines sin as an utterance, a deed, or a desire contrary to the eternal law. It is an offense against God. King David lamented, "Against you, and you alone, have I sinned and done what is evil in your sight." We sin when we love ourselves even to contempt of God. The Catechism points out that sin in all its ugly forms is exercised against Christ during the Passion. Ironically, at this darkest hour, the light of Christ's sacrifice becomes the inexhaustible source for the forgiveness of sin. This is Peggy Stanton, and this has been the Order of Malta's Minute with the Catechism.
You are listening to a least worst of The Doctor Is In. We have no best of.
Parents have all kinds of second guessing, feeling inept, pretty much every aspect of parenting these days. It is definitely a byproduct of the onslaught of all the psychologically correct experts who tell you, if you don't do this right, don't say we didn't warn you what your kid's going to become. And this affliction, using the word loosely, affects homeschooling moms. And it's kind of rattled Rose. Rose, you still there?
I'm still here, yep.
So, objectively speaking, you're looking at your older guy, and he's 7, which is really a first or second grade level, and he's reading at a third grade level. And you've been able, through homeschooling,
third and fourth, basically.
Yeah, to go at his pace. That's one great advantage of homeschooling. Academically, you can go at an individual pace. He's not locked into a classroom setting with 27 other kids or 20 other kids. And going has to move along relatively at their pace, although there may be room to go quicker or slower. So what is creeping into your thinking, what if I'm screwing it up? How's that happening?
I mean, I guess people that surround me, you know, I do have a lot of family members, and of course they're supportive. I'm, of course, the only one that is homeschooling that would ever even consider it. You know, I can't really
be weak, I guess, quote unquote, as you would say, because the moment I have a moment of weakness, I'll have like a family member or something say, oh, then just send them to school 5 days a week. And I'm like, but my point of it is that I understand that it's hard. Like, there's different hearts, but like, I want to be a better person, a better mom. I feel like it's the best thing for my kids to do it this way. And I shouldn't just give up just because it's hard. And like on a day like today, when I tried to do the homeschooling in the morning and my two younger ones just kept fighting with each other, and then the baby wanted me really bad and I couldn't help the 7-year-old, and I was just like, oh my gosh, why am I
failing? I'm failing. I'm failing.
Basically, well, obviously, I'm failing. I'm failing.
You just raised two questions there. One, you can't complain about homeschooling at all because all of them are going to tell you, well, just stop it then. They're not going to give you any good advice to say, well, if you want to homeschool and you want to slow down your child's worldly growth, here's some thoughts. No, they're not going to do that because, one, they follow cliches about homeschooling. And two, maybe a few of them think, well, I could never do that. I don't know. I don't know how she's doing that. I could never do that.
Oh, hi, honey.
Okay, so that's it. So you got to watch who you complain to. Or not even complain, just more or less share. The second thing is that you control your own schedule. Okay, so let's say the one-year-old right now needs fed. You got to take care of the one-year-old, and you're going to only get a nap this afternoon at 2 o'clock from 2 o'clock to maybe, if you're lucky, 3:15. All right, so that's instruction time. You don't have to get your instruction in the morning. We got to get this done by 11 o'clock because I got my schedule. No, that's one of the nice things about homeschooling. It's your schedule. And what you're already seeing is, especially at the younger grades, you don't need 6 hours. They're in school 6 hours. You don't need 6 hours to accomplish the same thing. You can accomplish it in 1 to 2 hours.
Mm-hmm.
My wife homeschooled 10 at one point for about 3 years. And it was her schedule.
Yeah.
So, yeah, you don't second guess yourself. I would also say this. The benefits for you, if you want to homeschool, the benefits are great. You don't have your son coming home at 3:45. He's going to go to bed at 7:30. He's got some schoolwork he's got to do. And then if there's anything else on the schedule, by the time you eat and everything like that, you've got kind of a free 1.5 or 2 hours. No, you're with him all day.
Yeah, I do love all of that. I mean, that's what I tell people that ask me. I say, like, well, you know, we go to the Y during the day and swim when all the kids are in school because we homeschool and we can do that if we want to. There's gym.
That's right. It's your schedule.
We get to go to the playground all day. Like, you know, the kids get to have and I get to see them, and they don't need phones or air tags or anything because they're with me. I don't have to guess where they are or question who they're with or... So there are a lot of advantages, and I always say I have a laundry list full, and it gets added to every day. But then, of course, it creeps in the doubt that I'm like, am I doing the right thing? Of course.
Oh, my gosh. Wish I could take that away from so many good parents. You know, it's really only the good parents who worry about doing the right thing. The ones who really don't care all that much about their parenting don't think about doing the right thing. They just kind of do what they do, however deficient it is, and they don't give it much thought. But it's parents like you who are saying, yeah, I this is the direction I choose to do, and I can be reasonably comfortable in this direction without sitting and saying, what if, what if, what if, what if?
Yeah.
You can't really enjoy parenthood if you do that.
I agree. I'm a little bit better than I was. I felt like I got pressured to almost send them to a 5 days a week school in the beginning of this year. And I backed out like the last week before because I'm like, this is not right. And I feel a lot happier that I didn't do that because it's not what
Good
I
for
want.
You. Don't do be bullied. Don't be bullied into doing something you don't want to do.
No, it's definitely better that they're homeschooled.
Well, there you go. You answered your own question. Definitely better doesn't mean there may not be a downside here and there, but you've decided that the upsides are a lot more. Sure.
Yes.
Absolutely. There you
go. All right, Rose. By the way,
you're right.
I'm going to see my little granddaughter, and her name is Rose, and my grandmother's name was Rose. So Rose is making making a big comeback. That's a nice. Reminds me of the joke. You hear the joke about the two guys that were sitting at the table, two elderly guys. One guy says to the other, "You know, I went to that memory conference last night. It was really helpful." Guy says, "Oh yeah, what was the name of it?" He said, "What's the name of that flower? That flower that the really pretty flower?" He goes, "Tulip? No. It's a really bright flower. Lilac? No. You mean rose? Yeah, rose. Hey, Rose, what's the name of that conference we went to last night?" I'll talk to you. See you later, honey. Bye. This is Dr. Ray. Be back.
Now, don't you feel better?
This program is brought to you by the following nonprofit underwriter.
Are you longing to hear God's voice? Lord, Teach Me to Pray, the free Ignatian Prayer Series will open your heart to His voice, to the peace you are seeking and the only love that fulfills the human heart, Jesus. God is calling you to true joy, knowing Jesus personally. Lord, Teach Me to Pray is free. Go to LordTeachMeToPray.com, click on the red box, order the Lord, Teach Me to Pray series now. Go to LordTeachMeToPray.com.
When your children consider going to college, where are you going to find a place that will prepare them for the future and build on the foundation that you've laid? The answer? Ave Maria University. With an authentically Catholic curriculum, including 35 majors, AMU prepares students to take on the world.
I've seen the difference in my son since he's been at Ave Maria. He's happy, he's excited about what he's going to do with his degree, and he's living his faith.
Learn more at avemaria.edu. That's avemaria.edu.
He was a doctor of the church, a Carmelite, and one of the most famous mystics of all time.
Matthew Bunsen and the Doctors of the Church.
St. John of the Cross wanted to help all Christians to become saints. One of his most important teachings was to encourage us all to learn how to love. "For there is no love," he said, "put love, and you will find love." He died in 1591.
For more about the Doctors of the Church, visit doctorsofthechurch.com.
This October 8th, our sponsor, Spirit Juice Studios, presents The Full Story of a Hero, narrated by Jonathan Rumi.
Father Flanagan lived his life by a simple principle, that we are all children of God, and it is our responsibility to care for one another.
Heart of a Servant, The Father Flanagan Story, rated PG-13. Tickets and info at fatherflanaganfilm.com. That's fatherflanaganfilm.com. Exclusively in theaters nationwide, October 8th.
Hey, you're listening to the least worst of The Doctor Is In with Dr. Ray Guarani.
Yeah, you can't be sad when you hear banjo. Done research on that, and the harmonica is the same thing. Well, you got to be careful with the harp, though, the harp or the violin. Joel calling from Ontario, Canada, Station of the Cross reaches up there. He's running up against a tsunami that's happening, and I think it is incredibly skillful by the ruling secular society at large. Hi, Joel.
Hello. Okay, so I have a concern about something called the Online Harms Bill that just got read a few weeks ago. Okay,
yeah,
and it's in Canada, but anyway, pretty much it claims to try to help the youth, okay, through government like rules, okay, but at the same time it lists. Reasonable suspicion and fear, like 40 times in the bill, okay? And it first says that if there's a fear of a reasonable suspicion that someone will do something that is listed in this bill, that the person can be, held liable for a certain action, and they can go to jail for between 2 and 25 years. Okay, so it's pretty crazy that they want to change the criminal code. Okay, so I don't know how to go about networking or something to maybe change it so it's not an omnibus bill. Okay, but not change, but like.
I don't know what your level of political influence is in Canada. I do know that those kinds of hate speech bills are popping up everywhere in Europe. Uh-huh. They're absolutely frightening because, of course, hate speech is oftentimes defined by the person who is quote unquote receiving it. This is not to say there isn't ugly, vile threats that can occur. The problem you run into, and I see this as a psychologist, most of the time these things don't stay within their guardrails. They become, for example, if you don't use somebody's proper pronoun that they demand you use, that can be defined as hate speech.
They don't even define the word hate either.
No, they don't. No. And it's a very broad thing. It's like a hate crime. If you somehow have a mindset that has to be interpreted, it has to be speculated upon, then that is more serious than if you rob somebody because you want money. If you rob somebody because it appears of their race, which is, again, you got to get inside the person's mind. You got to find motive, which is much, much harder. Any psychologist will tell you that. You're right. These kinds of things are springing up everywhere, and I don't have an answer to them, Joel. I'll tell you.
Oh.
I'll tell you how I approach it. I'm not going to be bullied by someone telling me what I'm allowed to say and not allowed to say. Now, as long as I stay within socially appropriate bounds, no threats, no vile put-downs, but if I say something you disagree with, that's not hate speech, and I'm not going to watch myself because you might not like what I say. Now, that's just me in my own little tiny corner of the world, but I'm hoping that more people... I think what happens in cases like what you're describing is that they generally get very much carried away, and hopefully there is a correction made at some point down the road.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, how many innocent victims will there be beforehand? Thanks for the call, Joel. Appreciate it. I want to get to Peggy real quick. Hi, Peggy. How are you, dear? Hello, Peggy. Hello. Yes, thank you for the call.
Hi, Dr. Ray.
Yes,
I was calling on behalf of my daughter. She has an early child, a 4.5-year-old, not by choice, but right now he's an only child. And she was concerned if homeschooling him would be more detrimental, you know, not seeing other children, having no one but she and him all day, than helpful.
Well, first of all, it's not going to be just she and him all day. I mean, there's all kinds of activities socially that she can get in all over the place. And homeschooling groups have all kinds of activities. There is no research. All right, Peggy, I'm going to give you the research from Homeschool Legal Defense Fund. There's no research anywhere that says homeschoolers are less socialized than public or private schoolers. In fact, the research points to, and this depends how you define socialization, it's not worldliness, which is a lot of people think it is. It's not. There's research that indicates, and I think it was done by a guy, his last name's Ray. I'm not making that up. I think his last name is Ray. Look it up. That they are more socialized. They're more comfortable with a broad range of groups. They have better self-images. They're emotionally healthier. They're more mature. So in that sense, the cliche of, well, I'm not sure he'll have socialization. The question always is socialization to what? So let's say he goes to school. And let's say your daughter says, you know, I want my little guy to be innocent. I want my little guy to be an innocent little 5-year-old or an innocent little 6-year-old. Well, that ain't going to happen because there's going to be 5-year-olds and 6-year-olds that are being raised totally unlike she's raising him. So you can guarantee he's going to be socialized to more worldliness than she probably would want. That's a given.
Okay.
So if she wants to homeschool, then the idea of, well, there's a socialization question.
Because he's an only child.
That doesn't matter.
That doesn't matter? Okay.
No. So given that, Don't let her look it up. Let her look up the research on it.
Okay. All right.
That is the number one. I'm going to run out of time real quick. How were kids socialized before public school? How did that happen? And what does socialization mean? If it's talking morals and upright living, that's done by the parent. The parent socializes the kid, not a group of third graders. So all I'm saying is, I'm not putting down public or private schools. I'm just simply saying socialization is not a reason because it's a cliche. Thank you, Peggy. This is Dr. A. Thanks so much for joining me. Walk with God. Always. That's the good socialization you want. You want to walk with God.
For information on Dr. Ray's presentations, books, and CDs, visit DRA.com and follow him on Facebook and Instagram. The Doctor Is In is a co-production of Ave Maria Radio and EWTN Radio and carried across the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network.